Please remember that the Lucy Pod is not a replacement for professional medical advice. If you have questions or concerns about your own amazing brain, please speak to a medical professional. I wish to acknowledge the traditional owners of the land on which I speak to you all today, the peoples of the Kulin Nation. Always was, always will be Aboriginal land. Hello, everyone, and welcome back to the Lucy Pod. I hope that you are all well and are staying safe. I've had to record this introduction, I don't know how many times. I don't know what's going on today, but I'm very tired. The energy is low. I'm feeling loopy. I feel as though I haven't taken my meds, even though I have. I took them like spot on time. And I'm just feeling very scatterbrained and like I shouldn't be recording an episode, but I need to. So I am going to try and hopefully I won't have to re-record this introduction because that will make me crazy. And now I am yawning. Oh my goodness. Okay. Let's try this. Let's go. We got the first part out of the way. Let's give it a go. So I hope that you all enjoyed my recent episode of the Lucy Pod. If you don't know what I'm talking about or you haven't listened to it, what are you doing? My last episode of the Lucy Pod, I got to interview the wonderful Jessica McCabe from How to ADHD, one of the most iconic ADHD YouTube channels and resources. For me personally, I view Jessica as one of the first people to talk about ADHD on YouTube and on a TED Talk, in a TED Talk, without being clinical, medical, bleak, depressing. She really, for me, revolutionized how we think about ADHD, how we view ADHD, and how we talk about ADHD. And it was such an honor to have her on the Lucy Pod. I don't want to sound like those, like, corny people where like they get emotional on the podcast, but I for me, the Lucy Pod is an endeavor, a creative endeavor and project that I've always wanted to do. And it's something that I love doing, but that I don't really, how do I put it without sounding like I don't care, but I'm not there compulsively looking at how many listens I get or how many followers I get. Like my attitude is I love doing it. The people who listen and they love it. And if that, you know, if my podcast can make 10 listeners happy or 100 listeners happier, I've done my job. Like, not that I haven't strived, but I didn't really think that like an opportunity like this would come to me. And the fact that the Lucy Pod, this small channel that was conceived in the depths of despair of lockdown and out of a desperation of always wanting to do a podcast and feeling like I couldn't, and getting to interview Jessica McCabe, I don't know how to describe it. It just means the world. And it's such a full circle and special moment. And to continue that and to honor that, this episode is actually inspired by my conversation with Jessica. We spoke about rejection sensitivity and rejection sensitive dysphoria. And I really learned a lot from Jessica because I was using the terms incorrectly or I was getting them confused. And I learned a lot from her, like I said, and she made me want to talk about RSD or rejection sensitive dysphoria or rejection sensitivity in today's episode. So let's dive right in. Have you ever felt like a casual comment from a friend or a colleague hit you way harder than it should? Something that should just roll off your back is like a gut punch. Or maybe you like find yourself ruminating on a small critique for days on end, even though you know it was well-intentioned and it was not insidious. If this sounds familiar, you might be experiencing what is known as rejection sensitivity or rejection sensitive dysphoria, especially if you're someone with ADHD. Now, a little clarity on these terms. Rejection sensitivity is a tendency to perceive or expect rejection by others. It is not exclusive to ADHD, but many neurodivergent people find will experience this feeling. And then you've got rejection sensitive dysphoria, which is more specific. It is a term coined by Dr. William W. Dodson. That's a really long name. And it's characterized as an intense emotional response caused by the perception that you have been rejected or criticized by important people in your life. While RSD, rejection sensitivity dysphoria, is not an official medical diagnosis, like you can't go to the doctor and be diagnosed with that, it is a term that many neurodivergents find useful in describing their experiences. I've seen it described as an allergic reaction to perceived rejection or failure. So for example, for me, I am someone who is really average with texting, and I have moments where I'm really bad at it, where I just don't respond to people, not because I'm lazy or I don't care or I can't be bothered. It's just things get busy and things happen. And I feel like almost everyone who is on the receiving end of me saying, oh my God, I'm so shit at replying, gets it and is not offended, because they know that this is not done out of malice. It's not out of lack of care or rejection. Whereas there are some ADHDers who would take that in such a way. They would view that as me basically saying, I don't like them, I don't care for them, I find them annoying. Like, they would ruminate on me not responding. So it's so interesting. For me, something so simple as like, hey, I just got busy, for some other people who struggle, who are, you know, neurodivergent, take that as an actual rejection. Take that as someone basically telling them they're not important, when it's nothing of the sort. And I don't relate to that, but it's a very real feeling. Whereas for me, the way I experience rejection sensitivity is as simple as like a question. So if I explain an idea to somebody or show them something that I've created, whether it be a story I've written, podcast idea, or just anything, and they merely ask a question, and the question doesn't even have to be a critique, it could be, why did you write that? I sometimes, particularly when I'm emotionally dysregulated, I take that as them questioning the work, how good it is, and my intelligence, even though they're just being curious. So like, I remember, and there's probably been many occasions of this, and maybe Dad, you can attest to this if you're listening. When I was doing my Bachelor of Arts and I was majoring in creative writing, and I was also majoring in French, but creative writing took up a lot of my time. I was writing a lot, and I, even though I struggle with rejection sensitivity, I really love sharing my work, and I love feedback. Like in class, when we would show out pieces that we broke and we'd get feedback, I never felt offended. Even when people were like being quite critical and maybe unpleasant, it didn't hurt me. So when I would go home and just share with my dad about something I was writing, and he would ask me a question, and didn't even have to be, like I said, a question that's doubting or leading or insidious, I would be like, okay, so you think my work's shit? Like, why do I even bother showing you? And it would really set me into a state of like, so my dad thinks I'm a bad writer, he thinks I'm useless, I should just not write, when he's just asking, oh, how come you made him blonde instead of a brunette? And I take that as like, why are you questioning like my intelligence? Like, there's a reason for that, da 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 da. And it would send me into a bit of a state, and I would snap at my dad, and my dad would just be like, what? Like, I literally am just asking a question, but I take that as something else. And some people might say, why are you adding a label to something? Why are you pathologizing something when it's just you feeling entitled, you not having a thick skin? You're entitled to have that view. That doesn't affect me. I don't struggle with rejection sensitivity when you say that. But when I hear rejection sensitivity, it really speaks to me, because I view it as my dad not only rejecting me, but by rejecting my ideas, my work, you're rejecting me. So that's how I view it. Even though I know that that's not his intent, I don't have any other tools to make me see otherwise. Or at the time, I didn't have tools to make me see otherwise. And so I really feel that. And even now, still, when I'm telling him about something I've written or something I'm wanting to write, or just an idea, any questions, that I get that little like, oh, like, why are you? But I have to remind myself it ain't that deep, loose. So understanding these nuances is critical. And people who struggle with rejection sensitivity or dysphoria often find themselves in a constant state of alert or trying to avoid situations where rejection might occur. So for me, when I would, you know, get a question from my dad or perceived rejection, I'd be like, right, like I'm never going to ask him anything at all, which is like really unhealthy because like you can't avoid feedback or avoid talking to your parents about what you do. Or for some other people, rather than letting their friend know, hey, it hurts me when you don't respond to my messages, they'll just outright ignore their friend. And then they'll like alienate themselves and not speak to this friend. And that's really unhealthy. And that's where rejection sensitivity can actually become a disorder and a problem, because it leads to a whole bunch of other issues like anxiety, depression, low self-esteem, and just becoming reclusive because you're avoiding social interactions altogether, which is not healthy. Like even though you have to deal with rejection sensitivity and it's unpleasant, you can't walk the world avoiding having bad feelings. Like that is life. I'm not saying that, you know, there shouldn't be environments where you feel safe and comfortable, but like it's really unhealthy to take something that you're experiencing and be like, right, so in order to never experience that again, I'm never going to do X, Y, and Z, because you have to learn to live your life alongside these issues. It's easier said than done. It's not all doom and gloom, but I think the first thing to dealing with rejection sensitivity is recognizing the patterns and the triggers, and that's the first step to managing them and to dealing with them. For those of us who are ADHD, we already have so much going on in our brains, and having this on top of it is just like a lot. And I feel that it's compounded when we are emotionally dysregulated, when our hormones are off balance, particularly women with ADHD. You know, we struggle with a whole host of other issues, you know, coming with like periods and PMS. So it's a lot. And sometimes you don't have the bandwidth to deal with it. But I think the way that you kind of combat this is realizing that understanding how your brain works can be a game changer. And I know that sounds like kind of like a platitude of knowing how your brain works is the first step and acknowledgement is the first step, but it really is. Learning about ADHD is one of the most useful things you can do when you're ADHD. And I'm going to make a comparison, and I don't know if I should make it because people might take it the wrong way. So I don't know if I'm going to make it. And now that I've said it, people are going to be like, why didn't you say it? But I kind of view it very similarly to people who struggle with severe illness. By learning a lot about it and learning your options, it helps you frame how you think about it. Because when you get diagnosed with something and you're not aware of it, it can sound really scary because it's the fear of the unknown. So then all of your thoughts are negative, right? Whereas if you know more and you know better, you can think better. And I'm not saying you can think your way out of sadness or ADHD, but when I was first diagnosed with ADHD, I didn't know what it was. I didn't understand it fully. I mean, it made sense to me, like, okay, this is why I do this thing, but I didn't really know. So then when I thought about my ADHD, it was like, I don't know what's going on. Like, what is this? How can I put a name to this? So then when I discovered the channel How to ADHD, the So Full Circle, I was like, oh, that's why this happened. So when this happens, I need to reframe it like this. So understanding your brain is so important because then it helps you reframe thoughts. It builds resilience. And you don't have to do that alone. You can seek professional help. I'm not saying you have to learn about your ADHD on your own. Just watch a YouTube video. Just listen to the Lucy Pod. You can do this in conjunction with talking to someone, whether that be a counselor, a psychologist, a psychiatrist, a trusted adult. That is how you can start to deal with things. Another little thing, according to a study published in the National Library of Medicine, emotional dysregulation, which includes rejection sensitivity, is a significant component in ADHD, and it affects day-to-day life and self-esteem, which is why I really think people need to reframe their thoughts. Because here's the thing. your ADHD and the negative traits that come with it are not necessarily all going to go away. ADHD is a chronic condition, meaning one is born with it and one dies with it. So it's so important that something that you are living with that impacts you on such a visceral level, you know what it is and you know how to think and talk about it. And that's what therapy can help with. It feels like I'm leading into a BetterHelp ad. But that's seriously what therapy, introspection, journaling, listening to the Lucy Pod, watching, you know, how to ADHD can help you do. And I don't want people to take that as you can think your way out of the ADHD. So I feel like we've already talked about what we can do about it, but I think first and foremost, self-awareness is key. Recognizing when you are having these feelings of rejection and why they happen and what you do afterwards, reframing what you do afterwards, rather than ignoring it or pushing it down or lashing out, focusing on what can I do after this gross feeling or during this gross feeling that can help. These things can really help you manage your reactions. For me, when I start to get that icky feeling, I walk away, which it's context dependent. Like if this were to happen to me while I was at work or in public, I might not necessarily be in the position to like walk off. Like you can't just do that. But I know that this only happens for me when I'm at home and talking to family. So for me, I just walk away. And I don't walk away in a way that's like, I'm going. I'm just like, okay. And I walk off and I'm like, whatever. And then I go and play some music and I dance in my room. Like I actually remove myself from the conversation. Like, you know, when people say remove yourself from unhealthy or unpleasant situations, that's what they mean. They don't mean remove yourself mentally, like disassociate, literally walk away. And if you feel better by saying, hey, I'm feeling icky right now, I need to go, hopefully the people in your life will be like, okay, leave. So for me, I remove myself from the situation. I recognize that I'm having this feeling. And I remove myself because if I stay in it, I have the risk of getting more upset and of lashing out. And that's going to make it worse. The outcome's going to be worse. So I remove myself. Online, the few studies that I did read, they do suggest techniques like mindfulness and CBT, cognitive behavioral therapy. With mindfulness, the first study that I read was not necessarily ADHD specific. That's why they suggest something like mindfulness, which is pretty hard for ADHDers. But if you want ADHD and you struggle with rejection sensitivity, mindfulness can be an option. I'm not going to give tips on mindfulness, but I will link things in the description. There are some guided like mindfulness and meditation that can help. And then there is the other option, which is CBT or just any other form of therapy. This is really important. And I've spoken on the Lucy Pod before about the importance of therapy and getting help, but I do know that it's not accessible to everyone. So when I say therapy, I also mean counseling, which can be done through a number of avenues. I mean seeing a psychologist. I mean seeing a psychoanalyst. I mean seeing a neuropsych. Statistically, people who seek help before the issue gets bigger, have better outcomes. So that's another really important step. And just remembering that it is okay to ask for help. Rejection, sensitivity, and dysphoria are really complex issues and feelings. And tackling them head on is daunting. Like I'm talking about this very freely and I'm offering all these solutions, but I know that it can be a really arduous process when you don't know and when you don't have the resources. So don't forget to always look in the episode description because even though I can talk about it, there are a lot of studies. And if I were to quote all the studies and read all the studies, the Lucy Pod would be very, very long. So do not forget to read those resources below. They're not only resources in terms of like counseling, but actual studies to help you better understand. And they're the sort of studies that have summaries and explanations for layman's because it can be really hard to understand. So just make sure that it's okay to ask for help. It's okay to be confused. But just know that with the right tools and the right amount of support, it's absolutely possible to deal with rejection sensitivity. You're not going to go, it's not going to go away, but there are definitely ways forward so that you can live your life with rejection sensitivity alongside. And before we wrap up, I do want to acknowledge that I might have been using rejection sensitivity dysphoria and rejection sensitivity interchangeably in this episode, even though I very clearly said that they are different and Jessica really explained that to me. So I just want to hone back in on sort of the way in which like we use terms and language is important. I teach by poor example, but again, rejection sensitivity, as mentioned earlier, is a psychological phenomenon or experience, and it's characterized by an individual's heightened emotional response to perceived possibility of rejection or criticism. It is a general term describing the emotional reactivity and fear of rejection in various social and interpersonal situations, but it is not a condition, it's not an illness, it's not in the DSM 5. And rejection sensitivity, like we said, affects personal relationships, personal interactions, and overall well-being. And it, you know, individuals who experience rejection sensitivity are maybe more prone to interpreting ambiguous situations negatively and usually struggle with managing their emotional reactions to perceived rejection. And then when you add ADHD on top of that, it is a recipe for disaster. And then you have RSD, which is rejection sensitivity dysphoria. And rejection sensitivity dysphoria is a term which is often, well, I see it often associated with ADHD, but as we said, it is not exclusive to ADHDers, but for this explanation, it's often associated with people who are ADHD, and it describes an intense emotional response to perceived rejection or failure, specifically linked to ADHD. RSD is more it's a more specific or intense manifestation of rejection sensitivity, and it's like tied to the ADHD. And ADHDers who experience RSD, kind of, it triggers a sense of failure or rejection, which a lot of people with ADHD struggle with, because for the longest time, well, not for the longest time, but a lot of us have been told, like, you're not very good at this, you're not very good at that. And then when we finally get diagnosed, it all clicks. So it comes from, I'm not going to say that trauma, but it comes from that background. And unlike rejection sensitivity, which is a broader concept, RSD is a term used within the context of ADHD, and it highlights the emotional distress individuals with ADHD may feel in response to perceived criticism or rejection, and it impacts their well-being and it exacerbates ADHD symptoms. So whilst I may have been using it interchangeably, I do want to hone in on that they are very different, but regardless, the tools and the information that these resources provide you and that I've provided you with can help tackle both. And tackle doesn't mean fix, it means help you manage. It's like ADHD medication. It doesn't cure the ADHD, it just helps it make it more manageable. I was going to say before we wrap up, I want to share like a personal story, but I don't have one. I already explained. I feel like my rejection sensitivity is heightened when I am asking a family member or when I am in a bad mood, specifically before my period. That's when my ADHD emotional dysregulation tends to come out. And whilst it's super unpleasant and it's something I need to learn how to manage, and it's something you guys need to learn how to manage, just know that your feelings are important. They are valid, but it's also really important that you take accountability and you seek help. And you learn to live alongside it. I really don't like it when people say live with it. It's like you live alongside it. And I think that's all we need to say for today's episode. I want to thank Jessica again for educating me on this and helping me better understand RSD and rejection sensitivity. I also hope that this conversation was enlightening and helpful for you guys. and that you learned a bit more, please feel free to share your experiences with RSD or rejection sensitivity with me in the comments or in DMs. I want to talk about it. Do you have any resources? What do you think about it? What do you know? I would love for y'all to share. And as always, stay tuned for another episode of the Lucy Pod. The next one is going to be so good. It's with two special guests. You're going to love it. And don't forget to like, follow, rate, all of that on all of your favorite streaming platforms. And don't forget to follow me on Instagram and on Facebook and on YouTube at the Lucy Pod. Those are all my socials. So do not forget to show me some love. And I will see you in the next one. Bye.